Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Julian Castro has dropped out of the Democratic race, and while he never polled exceptionally well, Castro's departure as the only Latino presidential candidate is another sign that the race is trending away from the diverse field it once was. Meanwhile, other campaigns are releasing funding numbers from the last quarter, all of this ahead of the Iowa caucuses, which are now only 1 month away. NPR political correspondent Scott Detrow joins us now for more. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So first, let's talk about Julian Castro. He stood out for his progressive policies, particularly regarding immigration and poverty. And he had several viral moments in the Democratic debates. But today, as I mentioned, he's leaving the race. Here he is in a video he posted on Twitter.
Given the circumstances of this campaign season, I've determined that it simply isn't our time. So today, it's with a heavy heart and with profound gratitude that I will suspend my campaign for president.
Scott, what does Castro's departure mean for the race?
You know, as you mentioned, I think he really did have a big impact on this field that went far beyond his polling numbers, which never really rose close to the top tier of candidates that we've mostly talked about. Yeah. He, I think, was second only to Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren in setting out a ton of policies that the rest of the field really responded to and several times made a point of matching. I think two big examples of that are immigration. He talked a lot about it. He's a Latino candidate who comes from a border state, Texas, and this was something he really featured prominently in his campaign. And in the first debate, he really set a mark saying that he thought that illegal border crossing should be decriminalized, made a more of a misdemeanor than the current classification. And that's something you saw really the rest of the field respond to a point where a lot of Republicans think that that could be an issue that President Trump could campaign on against the Democratic candidate. A couple other examples, local police reform. He had a really extended policy on that. He made a point at a lot of campaign events and even today dropping out of the race to pause and speak the names of victims of prominent shootings of police officers, of unarmed men. So he really focused on a lot of things like that. And I think one more interesting example of just how committed he was to talking about stuff like this was in the final months of the race, he made a point to say Iowa and New Hampshire are not representative of the rest of the country as a whole and should not be the first two states to weigh in on the 2020 primary.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, this is one of the most diverse crop of candidates in history. Now, three of the four leading hopefuls are white men. What really is the party saying about this, and what do party members make of this shift?
Well, I think it is worth pointing out that, first of all, presidential politics as a whole is incredibly undiverse if you look at the history. And based on those scales, we still do have a historically diverse leading field. You have a Jewish candidate. You have the first openly gay candidate. You have a woman in the field. But you're right. A lot of it's the older candidates and a lot of men who have risen to the top here. And in addition to Castro, the only Latino candidate dropping out, Kamala Harris, one of just a few African-American candidates, dropped out of the race last month. I think it's a problem that for the Democratic Party, which, you know, diversity is such a core part of its message and purpose. It's also something that really, as we've talked to voters, voter after voter has said, and polls have shown that diversity is not as important an issue to them this year, determining a nominee, as it has been in the past. And they're really focused on, one, the idea of electability, who they think could beat President Trump, and two, thinking more, who do I agree with on the issues most of all? I think that's one reason why Bernie Sanders has really seen, he actually has the most Latino support, if you look at a lot of polls, of all the candidates. And it's more of an issue reason than anything else.
Let's talk a little bit about the fundraising numbers for the last quarter. The Trump campaign said that it raised $46 million, which would eclipse all of the Democrats. And you mentioned Bernie Sanders. His campaign says they got more than $34 million, beating out his past records. How significant is this for Sanders?
It's a pretty big deal, and I think it shows just how much momentum Bernie Sanders has kept. He is consistently right behind Joe Biden in almost all national polls. He's got a ton of money, and since he relies on small donors, he has a lot more money where that came from. People are able to donate and donate again and donate again before they get anywhere close to reaching the maximum donations allowed. This is about $10 million more than he raised in the third quarter of fundraising, the candidates report in three-month chunks. And he will probably have more money raised than any other Democratic candidate for the fourth quarter. Pete Buttigieg raised about $25 million. We don't know how much Joe Biden raised. And Elizabeth Warren hasn't announced either. But in the final days of December, she sent out an email to fund supporters saying she had raised $17 million so far. So that's how that all stacks up.
Yeah, Andrew Yang also said he had a good quarter. You mentioned
Joe Biden. He did, about
$16
million.
Yep. You mentioned Joe Biden. He's in the lead. He's also become a central figure in the impeachment crisis, whether he wants to or not. How has Biden navigated this issue as it's heated up in Washington?
Well, it's been something he's had to face for several months on the campaign trail now, going back to September. He, by and large, doesn't talk about it too much or quickly addresses it and moves on, says that the central contention that President Trump and Rudy Giuliani were making just is not true. He has gotten pretty snappy at times and clearly is sensitive to the broader questions about whether his son was taking jobs in foreign countries, whether that was appropriate to take the job to begin with when Joe Biden played such a lead role in setting U.S. foreign policy. But we have not seen it really affect his poll numbers, and it's not something that a lot of Democratic voters seem to be concerned about. It might be more of a question if Biden is the eventual nominee.
Yeah, one big issue, though, the impeachment trial will also call back many of the campaigning senators like Bernie Sanders, Warren, and Klobuchar. Could that hurt their chances at all, do you think?
Well, we don't know when the impeachment trial is going to be,
first of all, and we don't know
how long it's going to last. And I think that first question, there's even more uncertainty than was initially expected in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's decision not to formally send over those articles of impeachment just yet, waiting to see how the Senate would approach that trial. I don't think we have any clear answers on that right now. We might have to wait another week before the Senate returns to Washington, D.C. for Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, and Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, to figure out a game plan for this trial. Right now, we just have no idea how long it's going to last. Mm-hmm. We do know this, though. When the impeachment trial is in session, it is absolutely mandatory, according to Senate rules, for U.S. senators to be present in the chamber. And that would pull Sanders and Warren and others off the campaign trail.
OK, let's talk a little bit more about Elizabeth Warren. She surged in popularity after the summer last year, but she's now slipped in the polls and has had actually a dip in donations. What has her campaign been doing to try to recapture that attention?
I'm really curious of the remaining candidates who haven't reported yet what her final numbers are specifically, but I think they're going to be probably in the $20 million range, and that's significantly less than Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, and possibly Biden as well. We don't know that yet. Warren is doing what she's been doing all along, and that's doing a ton of events in Iowa and New Hampshire specifically. I think the one thing that she still has going for her that hasn't changed is that Elizabeth Warren's campaign is one of the best organized campaigns in Iowa specifically. She's got a ton of volunteers on the ground. She's got a ton of staffers on the ground. They've really focused on organizing. And that's incredibly important going into a caucus because that's all about organization. That's getting your supporters to the caucus site, to the right location at the right time, being organized, and then being organized beyond that when caucusing is actually taking place. If candidates don't reach a certain threshold, their supporters have to go to other campaigns. And if you're a campaign that's organized, that has the information about the people at the caucus site, that can really help you boost new numbers. And that's something Warren's been able to do all along.
Yeah, and then there's Michael Bloomberg. He entered the race late. He's poured millions into advertising. He's not even trying to woo these early states. What do you think he's gambling on?
Well, to put something in perspective, I mean, we're talking about the enormous haul of Bernie Sanders raising about $35 million. Bloomberg's already spent like three times that amount on national TV ads. He just has unprecedented resources that he's willing to spend. He is banking on those four early states to come and go without a clear consensus front runner to emerge. And if the field is wide open, then he thinks that having spent all that money in the states that vote in March, April and May, he'll be able to hop in. It's interesting that he isn't even trying to make the debate stage, though, because for so many voters, the field begins and ends with who's on the debate stage talking.
That's right. That's NPR political correspondent Scott Detrow. Thank you so much, Scott, for taking the time.
Sure thing.